All right. So it's time for another podcast. I've been tweeting this morning, of course, and some of that flows back to my blog. It's starting to become a pretty good system. I mean, it's been getting better and better. And Twitter announced this week that they're coming out with notes, which appear to be more or less what I asked for, have been asking for a decade. At least, that Twitter not have a character limit, that they support simple styling and links, that they have enclosures for podcasts, and that they have titles for posts. Those are the five things. And they seem to check off all the items. The only question is, what about the API? And there has to be, in order for this to work, there has to be an API for posting them and modifying them so that you can write an editor that hooks into Twitter. Because having them require you to use their editor to post these notes is exactly what everybody always does, and it gets us absolutely nowhere. Because as writers, we want to use the editors that we like to use, and we also like to have developers be able to iterate over their editors and respond to what users want and have that happen over years so that we get a diverse market of writing tools. We used to have one, and so we know how to do this. You just have to have a standard file format that everybody can write to, and that's what Twitter is offering up here. I wanted Facebook to do that. I wanted Medium to do that. I want anybody who... it's so frustrating. There ought to be a common format, and there ought to be common APIs, and everybody that publishes stuff should allow you to post to it via some API. You know, if you don't like making an API, all right, let's use RSS, inbound RSS. These are not hard problems to solve in 2022. We only have like 40 years worth of experience doing this stuff. And I speak from 40 years of experience of doing this stuff. So, anyway, that isn't why I picked up the phone to talk to you today. The reason I did is because Winston Churchill said, as did Rahm Emanuel later, never waste a good crisis. And Bruce Sterling, who gave a talk in Copenhagen that like super impressed me, it really did. It was an amazing talk. Because it taught me something important that I had described behavior that I was already doing but hadn't noticed. And that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about what Bruce Sterling was talking about. And I will have a pointer to the audio of it and a blog post that I wrote about it at the time. But I'm going to do my own, like, put in my own two cents here. So what Sterling did was he started out by asking us, the audience of the talk, is like, how many people were there from, this was in Europe, of course, how many people were from the United States or Canada or somewhere far away? And a lot of the hands went up. This was very much an international conference, including mine. I was coming from, I believe it was coming from Berkeley at the time. I was living in Berkeley. And he said, you know, I bet that you are probably having some really big ideas about what you will do when you get home. And everybody laughed because it was true. and it's a phenomenon. So what you have all these great ideas. And then when you get off the plane in Berkeley or San Francisco or whatever, and you go through customs and you get on the BART all of a sudden, and then you get home and you turn on the light, and then all of a sudden you're back in your original reality, and all the reasons that you can't just stop everything and do the things you would love to do, they all come back. And there they are. And you realize, sadly, you're not going to do these things that you have, these ideas. In fact, it probably doesn't dawn on you when you get home. It probably hits you gradually as you go through the steps to get home. And he said that this is just the way it works for everyone. It was obviously true because we had all kind of experienced it before, even though we were experiencing the euphoria at the moment he raised the question, we understood that this is probably what was going to happen. So he said, but okay, there are other times when this happens. Big moments in your life when the norms just get completely turned upside down. And he gave some examples, and they're usually things that you think of as sad things, like you get a divorce, or one of your parents dies, or you get through a very tough situation like having a serious illness and maybe even not fully recovering from it. Or maybe you did fully recover, but for a while there, things looked pretty, they looked different, let's put it that way. And at the time, I had already experienced something like that in my life. I had had heart surgery in 2002, which is 20 years ago this year. In fact, it was 20 years ago this month that all this happened. And yeah, I need to take a deep breath because, yeah, I mean, it's still there. All of the terrible things that happened then and the fear of what was in front of me. And oh, it was just, and there were so many emotions and so much shit comes up. I mean, it's amazing. Like, you know, maybe I won't go into too much detail on that, but trust me, a lot of shit comes up. And then there's the moment when you get home and, you know, you would think that it would be like coming home from a trip to Copenhagen, but it ain't like that. I came home and I had this very strong feeling that I had just walked into the house of a dead relative. And this is an experience I'd had before with, you know, my grandmother's house in particular. When she died in, I think, 1977, I think it was. Very early. She was very young. Yes, it can be said now that I am older than she ever got, actually. She died when she was 66, and I'm now 67. I didn't even notice that, but yep, there it is. So she died very young, and of my grandparents, she was the one that I spent the most time with, knew the most about, I guess. She wasn't a particularly honest person, to be straight with you. She was what she was. She was my grandmother. And I had been in her house. I was in her house after she died. And, you know, you just sort of look at, this is a familiar place. I'd grown up in this place, really. And now we're looking at it. It's in the past tense. And since then, I've been in my parents' house. That's sold. It's gone. It's not in the family anymore. My parents are both gone. And but anyway, that's what I had. I had the strongest thing I had after the illness was, here I am in a house of a dead relative. And that's how strong the feeling was, is that I had transformed in a major way. And I wasn't, of course, had no idea what that transformation would be like. But what Bruce Sterling said was about the moment when you get home, or before you get home from this trip to Copenhagen, is, why don't you just do this? Write down all the things you want to do. They're all right there in your head right now. Don't throw that away. Write it down. That's valuable information. These are the things you would do if you were free to do them. And then hold on to that list for the moment when the bottom drops out of your life. And then, voila, you will have a list of things to do. And you will do some of them if you have it organized. And I heard people say, especially after each of my parents died, is that now is not a good time for you to actually do things. Well, that's exactly wrong, actually. It is the only time you can do things, that you can make changes. And true to form, before I ever heard Sterling's talk, true to form, after the heart thing, when I recovered, and I recovered really strong, got to say, I was a lot stronger coming out of it than I was going into it. I was really sick, and that affected strength and vitality and just all around Yeah, vitality is a really good word. I'm not going to find a better one. And less than a year after I had the crisis, I had sold the house. I'd moved across the country. I had quit my job as the founder and CEO of a company that I had started, Usenland. I was gone. And I was a fellow at Harvard University, something that I had to work pretty hard to get. And I was off doing all kinds of incredible things because that was an incredibly productive period of my life because I was free, because I could do what I wanted to do. Well, why mention that now? I'll tell you why. Because we're all there right now. All of us are there. And you can see it in the way people are responding. Like, I was watching MSNBC last night. Not from the journalists, unfortunately. They don't seem to be getting this. Because in all of this, they never once talked about the Ninth Amendment. You know, this is one of the key things. I'm not going to go too deep on this, don't worry. But this is one of the key things in the argument from the from Alito at all, is that, well, you know, if it isn't in the Constitution, you don't have it. It's not one of your rights. It's not one of the things that, it's not one of your rights. Well, the Constitution has a Ninth Amendment which says that's not true because they were afraid of that. They were afraid some asshole like Alito would come along and say, well, you know, if it isn't written down here, it's not one of your rights. They say the opposite. They say if it's not here, you have the right. Of course they did, because they did a bunch of things right. They also did something really bad. And we're never going to get over this really bad thing that they did unless we actually are willing to make the change. And this is the time to make it. The other time to have made the change I'm about to talk about would have been after the Civil War. And I find myself wondering if Abraham Lincoln, if he hadn't been assassinated right at the end of the fucking war. In other words, he had done all the hard work and then they killed him. Why? Well, I don't know why they did it exactly, but I'll tell you what the effect was. He couldn't participate in how we come back from this. I'll tell you what we should have done. I say we, knowing that, by the way, this is another argument we have in this country. I'm a first-generation American. I don't have a we in this. My ancestors did not live in this country, but I am we because I'm a citizen of the United States of America, and that's what it means to be a citizen. It is we. As soon as you become a citizen, you are part of everything about this country. Most importantly, the fucking Constitution. It's your thing. So that would have been a good time for us to take out everything from the Constitution that was put there to protect slavery. And when you look at it that way, what you will see is practically the whole thing is all about slavery and about protecting the rights of people to own other people. Amazing, isn't it? They don't teach you that. I had to read a book, Let Me Retort, or Allow Me to Retort, by Elie Mystal. And I've been like hyping this book like crazy, because I think everybody should read it now. I think I felt everybody should read it once we knew that Roe v. Wade was about to go away. I actually got in touch with the author and had been talking with him about this. I said, man, let's figure out how to make it so that you can like release the whole book. Let's site license it for the United States. Let's get everybody to read this damn thing and we'll get you the money. Let's get you the money. Fuck it. It didn't turn out that way, but so anyway, I'm giving the book to friends. I'm hyping it to you right now. I'd say, go get the damn book, you know, and listen to the chapter on abortion first, since that's what we're dealing with right now, but then go back and listen to the whole thing. And what you will see, what he sees clearly and explains incredibly well, with very strong language, but that's fine. He's an incredible orator as well as a thinker. Is that, yeah, that's what the Constitution's about. It's about slavery. And it's why we keep coming back to this in this country. Because structurally we've set it up so that we have to keep coming back to it. Why? Because the slave states have so much power. And because they were given that power, because that was the only way to get them into the union. And once they were in the union, they wouldn't let us go forward unless for every, you know, there was a rule. You add a free state, you have to add a slave state. Why were they so concerned about this? Well, it's because of the Senate and the Electoral College. And that's really where the power lies. That's where their power lies. And if you want to get rid of all this crap and keep the fucking court out of the bedrooms and out of the uteruses of Americans and, you know, and all the other places that they're planning to go, then you have to be thinking about what it is that lets them do this to us. And then we need to not waste this crisis. This is the moment when the bottom dropped out. This is like losing a parent or like getting a divorce or coming back to your house and realizing that you're in a dead relative's house, but it's your fucking house. It's one of those moments. And it's that moment when we needed to have this list of things to do. Okay, I'll give you the list of things to do. All right, you didn't write it down. All right, but that's okay. I'll give you the list. Here's the list. First, shut down the Supreme Court before they can do any more damage. Send them home. Lock the fucking doors. Turn off their internet. Tell them they thank them for their service and send them home. Second of all, no more Electoral College. Presidents are elected by popular vote. Number three, no more Senate. Our legislature is going to be representative, and that's all there is to it. We got to do something about gerrymandering. Let's put that in there as number 3A. Or what the fuck? Make it number 4. And then, this you're going to love this one. Let's get rid of states. What the hell do we need states for? Isn't this the big problem? Is that this is a stupid argument that, oh, well, in some states, abortion should be illegal, but in other states, maybe it should be legal. Yeah, they're bullshit. That's not what they think. They're just saying that to smooth you over to the next step, which is going to be outlawing abortion everywhere in the United States. They don't believe in states' rights. They only believe in it when you need something, when you need to be soothed so you don't like completely flip out, because that's where this is heading. They don't want states. We should get rid of states. All right, so then once all that's happened, we have a representative government. Then we can reinstate the Supreme Court. But we're going to make some changes to the Supreme Court. And this is, I got to say, these are not my ideas. These are Ms. Stahl's ideas. He doesn't actually say get rid of the Supreme Court, Electoral College, Senate, and states, but I guarantee you he agrees with me on this. In fact, I think he did say some of these things. Right. But when we bring back the Supreme Court, they have term limits, because one of the problems is these people become more and more stupid the longer they're in the court. We want people who have fresh experience being a schmuck. We don't want people who live in their ivory tower and don't give a hell damn about what we're doing. I mean, they go through this like whole argument about how this is the funniest thing, is how there's no long tradition of abortion in the United States, which is fucking bullshit, okay? It's just bullshit. Let me tell you why it's bullshit. First of all, we're an extremely young country. We don't have long traditions of anything. So that's problem number one. Problem number two, every person who's alive right now has only lived in a country where abortion was legal. Okay, I'm going to put an asterisk next to every. Yeah, there are a few people here and there who were born before all that happened. I happen to be one of them, okay? But in 1973, I think it was, 73, I was 18 years old. Right. Abortion didn't become a factor in my life. Oh, you could say that it might have been a factor in my life at that point, but it didn't turn out that way. It was a factor in my life when I was 22. I was right on the edge. A lot of things like that have happened in my life. Like, they dropped the language requirement in my college the very semester it was set to graduate, and I didn't have enough language. Things like that keep happening in my life. I'm whatever. So, yeah, maybe you were born before Roe v. Wade, but were you sexually active before Roe v. Wade? How many people today, alive today, were sexually active at a time when you couldn't get an abortion? It's a really small number of people, and it's getting smaller all the time. So, yeah, what does it mean to have a long tradition? If everybody's alive has lived only in a world where this is exists, I say that's a long tradition. That's as long as it gets in this country. What do we have long traditions of? I'll tell you what. We have long traditions of slavery. That's what these assholes are all about, by the way. They may not even be aware of it themselves, or maybe they are. But what they're yearning for is an America where we had slaves. You know, that isn't a big jump at all from what they've been saying. They believe in the world of the Bill of Rights. That means the late 18th century. And that was a time, it was the heyday of slavery. Yep. So, what did I say? Term limits. I don't want anybody there more than 10 years. 10 years, go on, back to the university, do whatever you have to do. But you don't get the power at that point to tell us what's constitutional or not. Because you're too cloistered. You're too separated from the rest of us. You don't get it. And then I want a much larger cast. And this is something that Ms. Stahl goes over in great detail in his book. Is that, you know, they say, well, you know, if the Democrats pack the court and throw on another four liberal justices, which is what we should do as soon as this 2022 election is over, they say, oh, well, yeah, and the Republicans are just going to do the same thing. And Ms. Stahl says, okay, great. Let them do it. Then we'll do it. Then they'll do it. We'll do it. And all of a sudden, yeah, there'll be 500 Supreme Court justices. Be much harder for them to do pull something like this off. And each one of them will have much less power and make sure that they're assigned cases on a random basis. And then we're through this terrible mess. We can go back and forth a few times and everybody will realize that it's just losing its power. It doesn't mean anything anymore. So we have, let's say, 500 Supreme Court justices and we have term limits. That's a fine formula for the Supreme Court, and it works. And now we're out of slavery. We dug ourselves out of it. We may have to fight a civil war. Okay, bring it on. It's not the thing that I would like to do, but if that's what we have to do, then we need to do it. Let's do it. We're not going to sit around. This is what you don't waste a crisis. This is what Bruce Sterling was saying. We can think that big now because we have been provoked. Because the world we now live in is unthinkable. It's impossible to imagine us living in this world. It also was impossible for us to imagine us doing anything to do anything about it because it didn't exist yet. We had to wait for it to exist. It's like you just can't imagine the upheaval in your life that something like a big change is going to cause until you already are dealing with a big change, at which point you don't have a choice anymore. But go get the book. I think it's called Allow Me to Retort. And I would say Jeff Jarvis was the person who recommended it to me. And it was what he said is just go ahead and get the audiobook, not the written book. Get the audiobook because he is just wonderful at doing the audio. It's something to behold. You'll laugh out loud every 5 minutes because he has great passion and love for this subject. And he really understands it. And it's not often that you get to read something like that. Especially when it's so damn timely. It's so on topic. So, thanks for listening. Talk to you later.